But hey.
Yeah.
At least both of the games came out, which is more than you can say for Pandora's Tower, which is really a lost cause.
Oh, that's done. Yeah. It's not happening.
Forget that one. import.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
Like Sam the Butcher bringing Alice the meat.
Wow. Fuck you. Really. By the way, John, our audience, none of them were alive when that show went off the air.
And trolling John is the one and only James Jones.
I was here before trolling John was in vogue.
Indeed. And, of course, our faithful editor, Guillaume Veillette.
For some reason, I thought it was a Beastie Boys reference.
It is a Beastie Boys reference.
Yes.
I let James have his little day in the sun.
All right, finally rephrase that. Our audience wasn't alive after the Beastie Boys became irrelevant.
So, this is episode 322. We're going to start out with a pretty quick new business, and that's because we're reserving as much time as possible for the big second segment when we're going to talk about our top five games of 2012. And I know my list has some surprises. I think it's going to be really fun. I think there's going to be a lot of good discussion on that. I don't know. Something just gives me a feeling. And before we really get started in earnest here, I also just wanted to give a little mea culpa. I just want to say that once again, I am very happy to be proven wrong by XSEED, because we found out a couple days ago that they are going to be publishing Pandora's Tower in North America. And I'm thrilled about this. I'm really looking forward to that game. And this is the second year in a row that I've said there's no chance that a game is coming out in America. And weeks later, we found out that that XSEED was doing something about it. So it's great news.
To be fair, though, I think no one in the world expected it.
XSEED probably did. They probably had a stinking suspicion.
Yeah, I'm sure they knew about this a little bit in advance. But I can only imagine that, you know, based on the success of the last story, really emboldened them to try to go back and say, hey, let's try this again with the other one. And it
probably made Nintendo more easy to work with the sum, I guess, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, Pandora's Tower, I'll probably pick it up, but it's not the most exciting game for me. But the fact that XSEED is now establishing this pattern gives me so much hope that they might be able to bring out other things in the future that Nintendo turns down.
Sangekino Reginald,
Captain Rainbow.
Like
oh, you know, those games are in the past, but I'm talking about,
but I mean,
you know,
stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that that we don't even know about yet. That's just really exciting. So, I mean, at this point, Level 5 could publish Dragon Quest X in North America. Who knows? Anything's up for grabs. I love that Nintendo is working with them, and I love that there are companies that are actually willing and interested to do the work to bring these games out and make them successful. So props to those guys, for real. And of course, if this is my superpower to be wrong about games and cause them to be published in the West, then I will try to use my powers for good.
Hey, Johnny, do you think there's a chance still that Retro Game Challenge 2 could come out?
No fucking way ever will that game come out in North America.
You heard it here,
wink,
folks.
Wink,
not
wink.
A chance.
Well, the sad thing is that one's probably even more likely is to not come out, because I think XSEED's already explicitly said, yeah, we can't get that one.
But maybe Nintendo will publish it instead in a stunning reversal. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, Nintendo published DS game?
Yeah.
In 2013?
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on with new business. Like I said, it's going to be abbreviated this week. But John is up first with a very abbreviated game.
Yeah, very abbreviated game. Gunman Clive. I decided to pick it up off the eShop thanks to your sterling review of it, Johnny. And it's good. It's like you said. I you're absolutely right. Where it's refreshing to play a platformer where all you do is just platforming stuff, kill enemies. You know, figure out the puzzles in terms of getting through each area. That's all you do. There's no hidden stuff. There's no kind of weird stuff to collect. It's just very straightforward. Really, like you said, the art style, It's great. I really like the fact, you know, I was trying to define what the art style was, and the best way that I can describe it is it looks like the AHA video for Take On Me.
That's the best way you could describe it.
That's the best way I can describe it. If anybody hasn't seen that video, go and watch that video. And it's sort of that kind of sketchbook sort of constantly shimmering kind of look to it. So it's really cool. I mean, I don't know how they came up with that, but maybe they are AHA fans. Who knows? I mean, it's like it's done by Horberg Productions. So maybe they're from Norway. I think AHA is from Norway.
It's made by one guy. We did an interview with him a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And he said it just kind of, you know, the art style just kind of came to him. And once he got the idea, he knew he had to use it.
Yeah. It's pretty brilliant.
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny to me, James, have you played this yet?
I have not.
See, you're the biggest Mega Man fan on the podcast. And that's saying a lot because I love it. I love Mega Man.
I like some Mega Man.
You really, really, really need to play this, James, because it is straight up Mega Man.
I will. I just haven't had the chance yet.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's $2, and you know, Johnny got through it in like an hour. I got through it an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's about an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
Maybe after the podcast and after I eat dinner at 10. He says at 10:13 p.m.
Yeah, go dig under the couch and for some quarters or something. I mean, it's so cheap.
On the subway today, actually, I started my second run through.
The whole game.
I played as Mrs. Johnson, and you know, she's got a dress, and guess what? She floats.
Nice.
She is Peach from Super Mario Brothers 2.
Exactly. Yeah. This guy loves the same games that we do and knows how to throw us a bone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really liked I liked the feel of your character. Your character, it's kind of hard to describe, but your character jumps in a kind of it's not floaty. It's kind of slow, predictable sort of thing, but solid. Your character feels like he has weight to him. That's what I like. That's the best way I can describe it. It's pretty sweet. That's a great game.
Cool, man. I'm glad you like it. I think everybody would like it. All right. Guillaume is up next for new business.
Yeah, well, I've been catching up with some eShop games that I had missed out on the first time around, and I finally gave Liberation Maiden a shot. I had been wanting to play this game for a while.
Was it the pervasive marketing on the eShop front end that finally convinced you?
No, well, I had actually put it on my wish list.
it was her massively tight fitting bustier and the fact that she's the president of Japan.
I'm somewhat of a Suda Goichi fan.
Okay.
As evidenced by the fact that I just called him Goichi.
There you go.
And I like No More Heroes. And although, like, for I think that what kept me away from the game is that the trailers that I had seen were all anime cutscene, and I had really no idea what the game really played like. I had seen some still shots, and I kind of expected a janky game because, let's face it, it's Suda.
Yeah.
And the game turned out to be surprisingly not janky.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not great, but it's certainly functional. There's no weirdness in there.
Yeah. It controls really, really well. I would say that the controls are not unlike Sin and Punishment in that you're not really piloting a mech. You're kind of just moving your character on a map. But it still works fine, you know. You paint, at least with the default lasers, you paint targets in the same way that you would in like Panzer Dragoon or Rez.
Or Star Fox if you get the lock on going.
True. Yeah. That looks really, really cool. You know, you can paint up to 20 targets. The more you spread your shots around, the less shields you have. So there's a risk reward element there. And I really like the fact that the game is 5 missions long. You've got secondary missions that you can, attempt, like you're gonna have like a mission where you've got a train going around, and the mission will be to blow up a bridge or to kill all the trains.
I just remembered that mission being really absurd. Like, all right, you're the president, blow up all the trains.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And she's like, okay, I'm gonna do that. I'll blow up all the trains.
The weirdest secondary mission though is one where they ask you to find maybe like to shoot like this area. On the ground to reveal this hidden enemy, I don't know, weapon or something, and you shoot around, and once you find the right spot, a 2D sprite of a piece of cake floats up. And your prime minister says, good job, you know, Miss President. And the weirdness of this is not acknowledged in any way.
No, it's just like, whatever.
They just don't give a shit.
Well, like, at first I thought, like, was this some weird localization thing? Like, it, whatever was there before was just really unsettling and they had to replace it with cake?
I don't know. It's really, really weird. I gotta say, I really have a thing for this kind of game where you kind of clear areas of a map little by little. There's something very, very satisfying about this area that's really dangerous because there's tons of enemies, and little by little, you work your way through and you manage to make it safe and then move on to an even more dangerous area. It reminds me a little bit of the EA's old Strike series, like Desert Strike and Jungle Strike.
Yeah. Nuclear Strike.
Yeah, or even more obscure, Space Invaders Get Even on WiiWare.
Space Invaders Get Odd.
I absolutely love that game. I'm probably the only one, but yeah. There's one thing that's a little bit disappointing, and it's that the whole, like, you know, 17-year-old president of Japan thing is, as far as I can tell, played straight.
Oh, yeah, it's totally played straight. I mean, there's some weird stuff in there that only works because of it, but it's still played straight. Like, there's nobody goes like, gosh, we probably should have elected an adult for this position. I mean, just
yeah, it's so weird. And, you know, like, No More Heroes is kind of, like, some people see it as this kind of satire, and, you know, you're playing this loser nerd.
She inherited the presidency, too, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Or was it some... She's an inherited president who's 17-year-old, goes to school as a schoolgirl, and also pilots a mech. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's like he just got as high as he could and made this game.
I will end on the fact that this is also a Guild 01 game, just like Crimson Shroud. And where Crimson Shroud was really, really impressive in the way it was written, the dialogue in this is just stupid.
It's amazingly bizarre.
You can, through achievements, you can unlock pieces of lore or story, and like the bio for the let's say the prime minister says, he does not coddle Shoko, the main character. He is blunt and straightforward about sharing his opinions with her. He is an honest and sincere man.
It's good to know.
But at least you unlocked that.
He
though.
Is a series of declaratory statements.
It's like written by a third grader.
Do you find though that the game is just really fun to play?
Oh yeah, it's a good action game. As I said, it's exactly the type of game that I like. The structure of the missions and the controls and everything, it's very impressive. It just reminds me that I do want to play Zone of the Enders. Like I was looking forward to this release for a long time, and the only thing that prevented me from getting it day one was the fact that, you know, it has performance issues on the PS3. And this game kind of reminded me, oh yeah, I kind of like these, you know, impressive action games with giant mechs.
It's a very different experience, but it's still, you kind of get that, like, giant mech crazy anime story bullshittery that just makes those so much fun. Like, there are games that have come out, anime mech games, that, like, played it dead straight, and you're just like, what the hell? But like, these games just go like this, like, whatever, let's get crazy.
So I just, you know, very impressive, plays well, not janky at all. It's very, very short, but...
very short.
I really don't care. Yeah. Awesome.
I might have to check that one out. James, you didn't have anything this week, did you?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, then I will wrap up new business, and I don't have too much either. I've been... sort of cramming for my top five, and we just did our top five lists of movies over on Box Office Poison, and that took up a lot of my time getting ready for that too. And that should, by the time you hear this, that one should be out over at crosstalk.com. So if you're into movies, you can check that out as well, with some old RFN guys. But the new thing that I wanted to talk about this week actually just came out today, and that is the demo for Fire Emblem Awakening.
Oh.
A game that's coming out here in about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks in North America. It's been out for a long time in Japan, and you know, a lot of Japanese gamers considered it their favorite game of last year. I'm pretty excited about it, and you know, I'm not the biggest Fire Emblem fan. I've really only played the GBA one that we did for Retroactive that I have as an ambassador. But I really enjoyed it, and I like a lot of other games that are similar to Fire Emblem. So it's not a big stretch for me to say that I'm really looking forward to this. The eShop demo is interesting because it looks really great, especially the cutscenes are gorgeous. They look like anime style, but they're done in CG, so they're not made with 3DS graphics. They're movies that they're showing, but they're not actually hand-drawn anime. They're made with CG models,
yeah.
So there's this kind of roundness and three-dimensional depth to the scenes, but they're done in a very fluid Japanese art style, and they really pop in the 3D on the 3D screen. They really look great. And then of course the actual battles are, done in this extremely simple 2D kind of art style, cause you see all the characters from overhead, and it actually looks not unlike the GBA game that we played last year, a couple years ago for Retroactive. So I can't say I'm impressed with the main battle graphics, but then, when two characters start fighting, when you actually attack with a unit on the map, it does go into this little battle scene where you see the character models hitting each other, and those look really good. So there's like three or four different art styles in this game, and it's constantly flipping back and forth among them. It's really kind of a strange choice. The first thing I thought of was Final Fantasy VII. You remember?
Because it had
like four different versions of every character model, and it was constantly using different ones for different purposes.
And that happens in the GameCube and Wii Fire Emblems as well. It sounds very similar to what they did in that
game. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even the GBA one had the fully animated full body sprites that fought. Then it had the headshots, and then it had the little chess pieces. I think it's just maybe they just don't care. It's just something part of the franchise. Like, we can deal with this. What doesn't make a difference? Let's do it.
Yeah, I guess it is consistent now that you mention it. But the game plays just like Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem's been around since the Famicom days. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's changed all that much mm-hmm. in the past 25 years.
I mean, Shadow Dragon's the NES one, isn't it? I think it is.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and
yes.
And it's. I mean, yep. It's the same game.
Well, there are little things, and I don't know if these are new to the 3DS game. They might have been in the DS one or some of the later GBA games, but there's some nice stuff. How part of the Fire Emblem series is that if you put two characters next to each other when they're fighting, they will get some sort of stat boosts,
right.
And they'll develop relationships,
support.
And they might say different things during the cutscenes. Well, in this game, it also helps immediately in the battles, because you actually, if you have two characters next to each other and one of them gets attacked or attacks an enemy, you'll see both characters in the little battle scene. So you get this more immediate feedback of, hey, something special happens when I put these two characters next to each other. And then if you kill an enemy while two characters are standing next to each other, or even three, you can kind of arrange them so that you can get a lot of extra credit based on the positions of the characters. But when you kill an enemy like that, all of them will get this little heart kind of pop up over their head, which I think signifies that their affinity for each other is increasing because of what you did. And this is something that's happened in the previous games, but it's never been visually indicated like this. I think it's the same system, but they're being more transparent about it. And I'm hoping this filters through other aspects of the game so that basically the game will explain itself a little better, and make it so that some of the best strategies are, more discoverable by the player without having to read a guide. So I thought that was a very nice improvement, and the music sounded really good. The story seemed pretty interesting, and the writing was nice. I think this is maybe the first Fire Emblem game that includes a casual mode. So unfortunately, in the demo, this is the only mode you can choose. You can't choose to play it the classic way. But in the final game, you have the choice.
It's called the USAP mode.
It's more of, if you're turned off by the Fire Emblem gimmick of characters dying permanently whenever you lose them, or if you're just not very confident in your abilities as a strategy gamer, and you just want to experience the story and not have to really worry about that kind of thing, you can turn on the casual mode. And it is separate from difficulty, because you can also select three or four different difficulty levels. So this is a separate option. But in casual mode, basically it just means that anytime your characters die, they come back after the battle. So between battles, any of the characters who died will just magically revive and they'll still be part of the story. And that's how most strategy games are. Mm-hmm. Fire Emblem is a little bit unusual in that respect. Although XCOM Enemy Unknown does that as well this year. So anyway, it seems really good. And of course, it's free. It's on the eShop now. You can go download it. And I would recommend that you do so. Nintendo doesn't always make the demos easy to find on the eShop. So it helps if you know that it exists, because then you can always just do a search for it. And it'll be one of the options when you go look at the details. But yeah, I certainly am still very excited for it. And looking forward to playing some more Fire Emblem throughout February. It's probably going to be, it is one of my most anticipated 3DS games right now, along with Luigi's Mansion and maybe Castlevania. I'm still not totally sure what to think of that one, but I hope it turns out to be good. So that's all for me, and that's going to wrap up new business. Now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about our top five games of 2012. Do not want to miss it.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All right, up first we have a preview of Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Gates to Infinity by Alex Kulafi for 3DS. James Jones says that this is his most anticipated game.
You asshole! I see what living in Massachusetts has done to you, John.
It's going to be on his 2013 list.
They're doing some things to kind of tweak the formula a little bit that make it sound a little more appealing.
More appealing. So make it less like having yourself eviscerated by a hot Pokemon.
Well, they're taking out the hunger meter, James. I know you'll appreciate that.
We have a review. 3D Space Harrier review on 3DS. Sorry.
I don't know why I typed review twice.
Yeah, I don't know why I said it twice. We have a review of 3D Space Harrier on 3DS by Dan Koopman. Sega's version of 3D Classics is the game we all knew needed to happen. And it's really good. Probably because it isn't Space Harrier and its shitty friends.
It's no Avengers, but, you know.
We have a review of Tokyo Crash Mobs, the 3DS eShop by Neil Ronahan. Oh, yeah, this game's weird as hell. It's Magnetica and Tokyo's Urban Core on meth.
Lovely. Yep, go to the review for more screenshots that will scare you.
Then your mind can process.
Yeah. Next up, we have an interview with Zombieux, Florence Sacre, and Guillaume Brunier. And the interview was done by Scott Thompson. Get inside the rotten flesh of Zombieux development staff. All you wanted to know and more. This is an excellent interview. Some really, really cool little tidbits about the game. You should definitely check it out.
I do not promise the development staff is actually rotten.
And finally, we have a contest for our Australian readers. You can win tickets to Pokemon Movie 15. Seriously, there are 15 Pokemon movies. All you need to do is live in Australia and draw a Pokemon that might live in Australia. Go there. This should be awesome.
Just make it some sort of spider Pokemon.
No! They already have those! The spiders that live in Australia are already Pokemon.
Well, then it should be easy. And, of course, you can find out about the contest, the interview, the reviews, the previews, the news. All of it is over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time, finally, to get into our top five games of 2012. Now, each of us is going to have our own personal list, and these are really our personal choices, so they're not necessarily what you thought was so-called the best game of 2012, but it's your favorite. It's the one that, you know, made the biggest impact on you or that you enjoyed and appreciated the most.
I don't know. My list is pretty definitive.
Yeah. Guillaume really speaks for all of us. So you get each one of our lists and Guillaume's on top of that, and it applies to all of us. But we're going to combine all Nintendo platforms together and just make one very simple, straightforward top five. So no crazy rules, no special categories or anything like that. If a game came out on a Nintendo system in 2012, then it is eligible. And and that means a game like Xenoblade, I think for all of us except James, really, would be eligible this year. James had it on his list, and Greg did too last year, but they both played it in 2011.
Yep.
So I think for the rest of us, it is eligible because it came out in North America in 2012. I guess that's about it. It's really pretty straightforward. We're going to go around in a circle, and each one of us will do our top five, our number five, and then we'll go around again, do our number four. And I'm going to start with John. John, I know you didn't get to play as many games as the rest of us. Do you have a number five?
My my year was kind of interesting because
I doubt it.
My game spending. Well done. My game spending was way, way down this year from my typical days of opulence. So I wound up actually hopping late on the 3DS bandwagon. I picked up a 3DS, I believe, around March, February, in there somewhere. So my 2012 games were actually 2011 games for the most part, really. So, probably my number five would be, Pushmo. That's one of the ones. Pretty much I bought everything that was down at the end of 2011, everything that got released at the end of 2011.
Yeah.
So that would be
okay. Well, I guess you can make up your own rules since you're a special case, John.
Exactly. I'm a special case.
We'll rehabilitate you throughout 2013, and next year when we do this again, you'll be set.
Hey, I've already bought a Nintendo game this year. All right, come on.
From this year.
Right. Yeah.
True.
I have
this
true.
Year. All right. So, Guillaume, you're up next. Well, I mean, we could talk about Pushmo, but do we need to?
It's old hat.
No, we do not.
The sequel is already out. So.
Yep.
But it's a fine game, very fine game. So, yeah, Guillaume, why don't you do your number five?
Okay, well, my number five is a platformer that came out as a downloadable. It is Mutant Muds.
Nice choice.
It was released at the end of January last year. And it was really surprising to see a game of this quality. From what I only knew Renegade Kid back then as a first-person shooter developer. So I was pretty surprised to see that coming from them. And B, like to see a game of this quality as a downloadable. Most of the time when you find indie games as downloadables, like they're mostly kind of puzzle side or like they've got some sort of gimmick to differentiate them from the rest. But here it's really just, you know, like the very old school, very twitchy. Yeah, I just love it. And, you know, it's so good that even now it's being released on iOS and even people who can't control the game properly are saying that the game is great.
And the deluxe version is coming out very soon on Wii U, and they're adding a lot of new levels, even beyond the free DLC that they did for Mutant Muds later in the year.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by that because, you know, we did get free DLC, and the levels were mostly more of the same. There was not really any expanded moveset or anything like that. You still did the same thing that you were doing the whole game. So it's just... It was just more Mutant Muds, and I'm hoping that perhaps there's some new twist in these new Wii U exclusive levels.
In the inaugural edition of Nintendo Force, which is the new magazine from a lot of pretty well-known Nintendo writers, including a couple guys from our staff, Neil and Aaron and Don Koopman are all involved in that, and I ordered that and have only gotten a few pages into it so far, but they did an interview with Jules at Renegade Kid about Mutant Muds Deluxe and said there's going to be some new enemies and a new power-up and, you know, hopefully enough new content that those levels do feel different. But, yeah, I can't argue with Mutant Muds. It's plenty of game, and it's done extremely well. I mean,
indeed.
I got to talk to Jules. I think you were there, Guillaume. Back at E3, we went out to lunch with him, and I just told him that I was so impressed that someone could execute that well on a 2D platformer the first time they've ever made one.
Yeah, seriously.
Because it is really professionally done.
Yeah, it's very obvious that he had been thinking about 2D platformer design for a long, long time to get it right away. And yeah, I'm very excited to see if there's a new twist in the Wii U version, but especially I'm excited for the sequel. That's also going to come out this year, I believe.
Yeah, probably towards the end of it. And they're working on a first-person shooter for 3DS now, which I'm pretty excited about because I felt like the, you know, Moon and Dimentium 1 and 2 on DS were really technically impressive. I think they were pretty held back by the control scheme on that system. So I'm pretty excited to see what they can do now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Mutant Muds is pretty awesome. All right, so I'll go next. And so my number 5 game of 2012 is New Super Mario Bros. U. And I kind of waffled a little bit on which one to put into this slot because Mario is, you know, really good. And I think when you compare it to the other Mario game that came out in 2012, it's very clearly superior in pretty much every single way. And ultimately, I do think it is my favorite Mario game since Super Mario World. But, you know, that includes a period of 12 years or whatever when there wasn't anything. Any 2D Mario game released. And I'm not that big a fan of Yoshi's Island, so I do enjoy this more than Yoshi's Island. Do I like it more than Super Mario World? I don't know. I mean, they're very similar in a lot of ways. I think you do have to give credit for the Wii U game for it. It does have a lot of interesting original mechanics that haven't been in any other Mario game. And, you know, it does very good things with the HD graphics power of the new system, and the 4 and 5 player gameplay is something that you couldn't have dreamed of back in the Super Nintendo days, and they make really good use of that too. I actually got to play some over last weekend. I had some people over for my birthday, and we played Mario for 2 or 3 hours and really had a great time. We were passing the gamepad back and forth, and some people admitted that they enjoyed playing with the gamepad more than they did the controller. They just loved putting the blocks everywhere. And it was interesting because we were playing 3 or 4 players, and, you know, the person with the gamepad in boost mode was actually trying to help some players and while also trolling his girlfriend who was playing as one of the Toads. So, you know, trying to balance that and with all the other chaos going on, it really did take some skill to try to do that all at once. So, you know, the game does have a fair number of original features. Overall, it's not the most creative Mario game ever made, but it sure is a step back in the right direction, and it's much closer to what I want from this franchise than any of its recent predecessors. So, you know, I don't think it's a total home run, but as a Wii U launch game, it's actually much better than I expected. And I think it's an excellent game, and it's one that I'm still playing through. So it's got plenty of content, and I've had a great time with it. But the music really needs some work. And James, what's your number 5 game of 2012?
Number 5 is always the one that sucks because you sit there and you go like, where am I going to draw the cut line?
Yeah.
And I mean, I had 1 through 10 that I did for the site in order. And I drew the cut line in theory at number 5, but then I'm like, but really, is this one 5 or is this one 5? But I went with number 5 as Rhythm Thief, which is a 3DS game that came out in March, I believe, thanks to Sega, which I spoke about extensively on the show. I just feel like it's a wonderful array of color and sound, and that's really, really high on presentation in the kind of ways that really you only expect from like the level 5 Layton games, but it's in a totally different kind of visual medium. It's so much brighter and more colorful and more just really, you know, upbeat, adventurous kind of stuff. Gameplay-wise, it's okay. It's not great. There's not a ton of variety in the game, but it's just so nicely put together as a package that it's a fun experience of itself.
Yeah, and the animated cutscenes are just... This game really made me want a 3D TV to watch anime in 3D for some reason.
The cutscenes are just stupid. They're just so over the top. It's just like, what? Why did you spend so much money on this game?
Seriously. But Sega, I love them for it.
Yeah, it's like, Sega, you don't have any money. Did you forget that?
No, you can't overstate the production values in this game. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. And I'm just, you know, I regret, I picked it up pretty late, and not especially for a low price, But, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, well, Sega could have sold way many more copies of this if they had sold it for cheaper or as a downloadable game. But then if it had been downloadable, there's no way it would have looked this good. And I, you know, the game wouldn't have been as good as a result. And
it could still be downloadable.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
as a retail price.
Sure, right. Sure. But I mean, like if this had been, you know, planned for iOS, there's no way. No way.
Yeah. 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 I have to blame this game's, you know, financial sales disaster on just bad marketing and
marketing?
Or really no marketing.
Yeah.
And just inexplicable delays over and over and over again. The game was supposed to be out months before it did. And then they finally released it the same week as Final Fantasy Theatrhythm, which is...
Yeah, because there's no way this will hurt our sales at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly overlap in the audiences for those two games, and Final Fantasy is, you know,
likely to win
one of the biggest franchises in all of gaming. Rhythm Thief is a completely new IP. It's just not going to hold up to that.
Well, especially because the game had already been out in Europe for literally months.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's just, I don't know what the excuse could possibly be, but they, you know, they should have gotten it out earlier or delayed it long enough that the Theatrhythm audience was looking for the next big thing. So it's just incredibly foolish and short-sighted, and it's a shame because it hurt what sounds like a really cool game. Mm-hmm. And I still haven't played it yet. I'd like to someday, but I'm not going to go out and spend $40 on it or whatever, you know, just because it's rare.
Before I started playing it, I had been telling myself, well, I want to finish Space Channel 5 Volume 2, which I had bought. I wanted to finish that first, but this game is much more forgiving, first of all. I really suck at Space Channel. but also, like, I think it's much better. Like, it's much newer, of course, but it looks better. The music is... It's got an energy to it, you know? Like, everything is just bursting out of the screen. It's incredible.
Very cool. And there's a demo, so if you completely missed Rhythm Thief, go to the eShop and do a search for it and try the demo. It's a pretty good demo, actually. Mm-hmm. Gives you a flavor of some of the variety in there and the great presentation. So, John Lindemann, do you have a number four?
My personal number four, Mario Kart 7.
Mm.
That's it.
Again, so, it's a 2011 game, although...
Again, yes, John is caught in a time warp.
Pretty close to the line there. It was mid-December in 2011,
so
you're getting closer to 2012.
I'm getting closer.
It's going to be great until this next game came out in 2006. I have a new game.
Next game, Final Fantasy III.
Super Mario Brothers 64 DS.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, I think we've talked about Mario Kart 7. I'm sure we've talked about it to death, so.
Well, honestly, we haven't talked about it in a long time. I'm curious, are you still playing it with any kind of regularity?
No, not really. Not at the moment. It's you know, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, I played it quite a bit for a while, but the thing is that the problem with Mario Kart games, especially on Nintendo handhelds, is that the online presence of your friends just kind of dwindles after about a month or so. And so it really, like, typically you would have that, you know, the prospect of online gaming to really keep you going in it, but that tends to drop off after a while. So, you know,
well,
once
I think there's just not enough reward in the online experience.
Yeah.
I can't get on there and just make fun of you the whole time.
Yeah, so. I know it does. I wouldn't say it gets old, but
it doesn't have the feedback loop of hearing your friends bitch when you snake past them.
Yeah, it's much easier and to just do a podcast with me to troll me, for example.
Yeah, well, that's true. Texting works well unless everything that you had conspired to troll with suddenly falls to shit. Thanks, Seahawks defense.
Yeah. But yeah.
We should get together and play Mario Kart online sometime, though, because it is a... It's been ages since I played it, but it is a fun game.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I mean, I would like to play it more online, but I just know that... that's the thing. It's like I've played the hell out of Mario Kart Wii, and I've gone through, you know, I've gone through the entire Grand Prix with that. So, you know, with Mario Kart 7, I could easily just go through the entire Grand Prix, and, you know, I'm pretty deep in it, but I know that after that, I would like to play online, and that's just not going to happen.
I do think that it's got some of the best tracks of any Mario Kart games. The reworked tracks are pretty good as well. I've seen some people bitch about the remake of the Rainbow Road from the SNES game, but I actually found it pretty clever. I don't know. I like it. You can actually jump and get boosts off of the ripples that result from the thwomps just hitting the road. I think like little touches like that really it adds a lot.
Yeah, I mean the problem I had with Rainbow Road was I just felt that it was much too easy. I was like, oh man, Rainbow Road, it's gonna be a pain in the ass because it's the old school one where you can fall off anywhere kind of thing. Right. And but instead it was just like the tracks were, you know, the track is incredibly wide. You know, it's
a lot wider relative to your cart than it was in the original game.
Yep, and it's not very fast, and I just thought it was too easy for a Rainbow Road. I usually expect Rainbow Roads to be, you know, ridiculously hard.
The new Rainbow Road in 7 is ridiculously hard.
Yes, yeah. It's and long, man.
It's just, to me, it's so hard to see what's coming up because of all the hills and all the crazy jumps that in a game that's already very arbitrary, that level feels extra arbitrary.
Yeah.
And I just get, it's the last one in the cup and it's the hardest cup. And if you've worked really hard to, you know, to have a lot of points in the Grand Prix up to that point, and then you get to Rainbow Road and you just get fucked.
Yeah. I felt it was really disorienting the way that they just, you know, you have like massive drops where you, like you said, you can't even see what's coming up ahead of you. And so I wasn't a huge fan of that, but it was difficult. So it did live up to its billing.
It is a quality game. So Guillaume, it's your number four.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be short. My number four is New Super Mario Brothers U. I just like, wow, what a great game.
I thought it might be higher for you, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, I like the surprise. So yeah, like the game was just a return to form for Mario. It's silly how such a little thing would improve the experience so much, but the map really brings back for me the joy and the satisfaction of finding secret exits. Because, you know, like in the previous New Super Mario Brothers games, it seemed so abstract. The map didn't seem connected, and it didn't feel like, you know, you had truly unlocked anything.
Didn't really feel like a place.
No. And when you unlocked a new level, it was something that was already there. You were just kind of looking for a way to access it. On this map, though, like it's truly a surprise, and it feels so much more satisfying to discover something. When I found that secret exit in the second level, I just like, there was no comparable feeling. It was awesome. Yeah. I find the stages really well designed. I really like the Rainbow Road levels. I just wish that there were more of them, but stages like Run For It, where you constantly have to hit P switches to turn coins into blocks that you can run on, and you have to run to the exit. Really, really fun, really, really clever. The game is kind of, does a good job of being a cartoon. Like I could see myself, you know, like if I were a kid, like really, really enjoying the pantomime of, you know, Mario and Luigi, just, you know, laughing at the pat, pat, pat when they're running across the map. And my girlfriend and I were just cracking up at, I think it was Morton Koopa. When you defeat him, he has the weirdest, funniest grunt. I don't know, like it's just it's very colorful, very, very vibrant, and really like they do a lot with very little, I find. And you know, there's no denying that, and this criticism always comes up, the music, not very good. But if you're a Community fan, I played a little bit of it after watching Community. And if you imagine the bop bop to be pop pop, I you're welcome, and or I'm sorry.
That is, I would never have thought of that. That's great.
No, it's not. No, it's not leaving your head. I'm sorry.
Oh man. So my number four is Fluidity Spin Cycle. It's a game that probably isn't going to come up on many lists, not least because it came out after most people already did their top 10 or top 5 lists of the year. But it did come out in very late December 2012, and I think it is one of the best 3DS games I played all year. In fact, it's the highest 3DS game in my rankings, and it's not even in 3D, and it's not even sold in stores. It's only on the eShop, and you know, it does capture most of what I liked about the original Fluidity, not all, but most. And I think the things it adds are, while not perfect, are sufficiently interesting and rich with game design territory that it was very much worthwhile doing. It's a game that you, in order to play it, you have to control it in a little bit of a funky way that's not explained by the game. For instance, you don't actually have to use the touch screen in this game. You can just use the A and the B buttons to do all the stuff, use all the powers of the different forms. And that makes the game way easier to play. And it never tells you you can do that. I just accidentally stumbled upon it one day. So that makes a big difference. The fact that you don't actually have to turn your system upside down makes it a hell of a lot easier to play this game, even when you're, out and about or riding in a car. And you can. I played quite a bit of this game while riding in cars or on subway trains. So, I think the game, it works very well as a portable, and I think it still feels very much like a big game, like a big quest with a lot of different environments that you go through and some extremely clever puzzles. And it's all based on this really great physics engine that is a challenge to work with, and yet it always makes sense, and it almost always does what you expect it to do, so you don't get frustrated. It's a very special game, and it's not getting enough attention, and I'm happy to evangelize Fluidity any chance I get, and I'm just thrilled that they made another one and that they did it right. And I certainly hope this series will continue, but even if it doesn't, it's got a pretty good legacy.
And they fixed the jumping, so everyone who bitched about that in the Wii game, you press a button.
Jumping does work better in this game, absolutely. It does it every time you want it to. So, James, what's your number four?
So, my number four game is The Last Story, which we spoke about at length the last 2 weeks. So, I mean, for me, I played at the very start of the year, so it's kind of, it is what it is. But I really enjoyed this game. It was creative. It's got an interesting world full of interesting people, and its combat system is really enticing and really exciting. So, it's a really high recommend, and thank God for Xseed, seriously.
Yeah, obviously. So I thought this would be a lot higher on your list, so now I'm extremely curious to find out what's yet to come. But we'll move on to John, and let's hear your number three game of 2012.
My personal number three is Super Mario 3D Land. Of course.
Okay.
Which
also a late
again, 2011.
Hey,
so really, John's doing his top five of 2011.
I set the expectations low right out of the gate.
So what did you have in your top five from 2011?
A bunch of stuff that came out before these games.
There we go.
Likely, yeah. So Super Mario 3D Land, beat it recently. It's good stuff. I mean, I kind of, it's funny, Guillaume, talking about having the map in New Super Mario Brothers Wii U. I kind of miss that. I kind of miss having a map, but Super Mario 3D Land was a really good portable version. I mean, you could pick it off in bite-sized chunks over a long period of time, which is what I did. And at the end, quite difficult. So overall, very, very pleased with it.
I think it might still be my favorite 3DS game.
It's really good. So after our conversation last week, I went and spent some time cleaning up what I still needed to get to the last level.
Yeah.
And besides the sheer just sadism of that level, it's tremendous experience unlocking everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I put in all the time I did in it. I mean, definitely, that I didn't just...
Did
you
think it was worth it, James? Worth the time
investment? It depends on how close you are. I was only a few hours of stuff away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot of work to get it, and it's a tricky level, but you could probably get most of the experience watching people play it online, I would say.
I think I'm pretty close, though.
The neat thing, there's just some neat things the game does. Some like, hey, this part of the platforming looks really hard, but actually, if you think about it, there's ways you can short circuit it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds good. Okay, I might have to crank through the last little bit and unlock that for myself.
I find that playing Mario games is its own reward.
Well, to an extent, but if you're just collecting gold flags or second playthroughs, it diminishes a bit that experience.
Yeah, but it's the kind of game that, like it's bite-sized, and you just, you know, you tackle everything very casually, and you end up progressing that way. Like, I mean,
you're totally right, Guillaume, but I've got two other newer Mario games that I haven't 100%ed yet.
What?
So, for me to...
You still haven't 100%ed them?
No. And I'd like to. I'd like to do it on all of them.
But, I don't understand you people.
When there's still entire worlds that I haven't seen in the Wii U game, it's hard for me to go back and just replay levels in the 3D in 3D land just to unlock this thing. But
look, I finished New Super Mario Brothers U like 8 months ago. 100%. Yes.
All right. So Guillaume, what is your number three game of 2012?
All right. Well, New Super Mario Brothers U was the highest platformer, if you can imagine that, on my list.
Wow. Your favorite genre?
My number three is a game that I've talked about before, Crimson Shroud. Well, what else can I say about it that I haven't said? It's got such a great atmosphere for a downloadable game.
It's a really good game.
Yeah, it's helped by just jaw-droppingly good music and really, really strong writing. It's got that one niggling, really big flaw, but
yes.
I think that the fact that I still played the game for hours and hours, running around, not knowing what to do, and still stuck with it, speaks volumes as to, you know, the quality of the rest of the game. Normally, I have no patience for that kind of crap. But I was really into it, and I really recommend that everyone play this. It's really an original concept, so, you know, that goes a long way. It's got attention to details, like, you know, rolling the dice and using them in fun ways and surprising ways. And also, I like the fact that it's short, because...
Yeah.
You know, I don't really have time for long RPGs, I find, these days. Somehow, editing a podcast really cuts my gaming time during the weekends.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. And yet, despite being short, the game is really, really satisfying. I felt like I had played a complete game. I had had a full experience. And I still wanted to keep playing, and I did. You know, like, I'm most of the way through a second playthrough, and there is a Game Plus mode. So people give this a shot because it's really, nice. Really good.
Yeah, so when I said I had trouble drawing the line between 5 and 6, this was the game that got cut. So it was right there up until it became my turn to say what my number 5 game was.
Yeah, I need to spend more time with this game. I got a little stalled out. I think I'm just at the beginning of the second chapter. So really not that far into it.
That is where you would get stalled out. Yes.
It's just that other games came along and distracted me. Mainly Fluidity, because I got Fluidity very soon after this, and I poured myself into Fluidity, pardon the pun.
I will do no such thing.
I disapprove.
And I just need to get back into Crimson Shroud, because it does seem really cool. All right, so my number three game of the year is one that I bet will not be on anyone else's list, and probably not many other top five lists of any gaming critic or on any podcast, and that's
Elf Bowling 1 and 2.
No, it's because not very many people played it, unfortunately, and that game is La Mulana, a WiiWare game in 2012, if you can believe that. And this is a fantastically deep and complex and big, really fun, satisfying 2D game that combines all the best elements of Metroid and Mario and Zelda, a lot of Zelda, and yet also has all the really crazy, like, insane puzzle solving stuff of like Myst. And it's also extremely difficult 2D platforming, and it controls perfectly. And it's a game that it has this incredibly complex structure and set of rules, and you have to learn these things as you play through it. And, you know, given the popularity, the enduring popularity of games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls this year, I'm surprised that not more people have been talking about this game, because to me, this game is at once more interesting than those games and also more forgiving. and yet has the same kind of spirit. I mean, you will die a lot, but there are save points all over the game.
It's not punishingly brutal about it.
It is, though. It is punishingly brutal, but I feel like every time I play it, I learn something new that's really exciting. I pull back this layer off of the game, and suddenly it changes the way that I perceive the way the world is put together, and it gives me 10 new ideas of where I could try to go next. And you know, it gives me ways of solving puzzles that I came to before and didn't know what to do. And I get these really cool new powers that make the combat easier or just let me do something that I couldn't do before. Let me get to a new place. And it is kind of this crazy, like Metroid RPG almost, because it is really long and you do kind of level up your character. And it is very much, you know, interested in telling a story and putting forth a lot of text that you have to kind of decipher and figure out what it means. You know, the other game that I've compared it to is Fez, which again is just this incredibly obtuse puzzle game. That appears to be a platformer, but is really more about decrypting the world and the mythology that's happening in the world. And the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. And the La Mulana I've played for, I think, about 15 hours, and I feel like I'm maybe halfway through it. I mean, it is a gigantic WiiWare game, and there's just so much going on in it. There are enormous wikis online that serve as basically game guides through this game. And the game is so complex and so non-linear that a simple like linear walkthrough would be almost unreadable for this game. So a wiki is like the perfect way. And it's great because you can go in there and you say, I'm kind of in this area and I don't know what to do. And you can go in there and get a hint, and it doesn't spoil the whole game. It just kind of gives you a couple ideas of things to try, and boom, you're off to the races. And you play it for another 2 hours and find all kinds of places and beat a new boss and get new powers and new equipment. And then you get stuck again. And you're like, oh man. And you know, you either give up on it and go check on the website, or you keep pounding away at it until you figure something out. But it's such an expansive game. It looks fantastic. It sounds amazing. It controls perfectly. I really just can't say enough about it. I mean, it is a game that is almost perfectly suited for my tastes, but I don't think my tastes are all that unique. I think there are a lot of people who would enjoy this and haven't given it a chance yet. And luckily, it just got greenlit on Steam. And the Steam version is the new PC version, which is based on the WiiWare version. So it has the new graphics and the new music, and it even, I think, has a couple improvements over the WiiWare one. So if you just hate the idea of playing a WiiWare game in 2013, maybe you'll consider the Steam version, because I'm sure it'll be very good as well. And you can probably get it for a lower price. But I really do hope it will get more people talking about La Mulana, because I think it's a fascinating and extremely well-made game.
Well, it's already bought. It's just a matter of finding the time.
Yeah, it will take a lot of time, but I think you'll get a lot out of it.
Cool.
So James is up next with your number three.
Another 3DS game, Tales of the Abyss, which I know it's a port, whatever, go to hell, I don't care.
Well, no, my objection would have been, it's a Tales game.
Yeah, well, you can doubly go to hell.
I object that it's actually from 2012.
You already are my personal hell, so I mean, it's just a really, 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 I mean, it's easily one of the longest games on 3DS right now, just in terms of sheer volume of content. And this far into the console's life cycle, it's kind of jarring that we still don't have a big original RPG. I mean, it's coming, but
this is a good alternative to a big original RPG.
It is, and especially because I never played it before. So to me, hell, it's just as good as a big original
RPG. No one ever played the original PS2 version.
No. Releasing that game on the PS2 was a massive marketing mistake. But they did it, so they took the money hat and did it, whatever. But it's a really solid RPG that has an absolute ton of content in it. And for the 3DS, that's kind of a small number of things that actually fill that need. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you actually feel like you're getting a console Tales experience on a handheld.
Oh yeah. It's got all the voice acting, all the FMV, all the great cutscenes, and
yeah, it's kind of an interesting, more of a just an exciting experience. You feel like you're getting a full RPG experience on the handheld, where it really kind of works well.
Mm-hmm.
I pumped God knows how many hours in it to beat it, which is always nice. I feel like the real value for money here.
You know, and I think the other part of it is that even though it is a port of a PlayStation 2 game, they really took a lot of time and effort to make the 3D effect worthwhile.
They did. It really works
really good in 3D.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of amazing that it looks as good as it does in 3D. I was really surprised by it.
Yeah. Some of those cutscenes are striking, but the camera angles that they set up are just perfect for 3D.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle to think that some of the angles they picked were the original angles. Like, it almost seems impossible that the camera was that perfectly placed.
Yeah. I made it halfway through this one, too. I guess this is like my list of shame, the list of games that I started and didn't finish.
Well, that's still 70 hours of gameplay, right?
No,
I played
35.
It for about 30, I think.
I think I beat it in about 40 to 50, so you're not that far off.
Okay. I will get around to it someday.
Not that you'll remember anything that's happened, but...
Yeah. I didn't understand it anyway.
It's got crazy balls ballistic plot, which is perfect. I want that in my Tales games. There is a red line they can cross where it gets too weird. That red line is Dawn of the New World. But right up until you reach Dawn of the New World point, you're fine.
We're probably going to get a new Tales game for 3DS this year.
I would think. I mean, there were three DS Tales games, including that double Tales of Hearts.
Yeah, I want to say it's been announced in Japan already.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think it's out yet, but I think we're not going to have to wait too much longer.
It would be nice. I mean, they haven't released a Tales game in... They went a long stretch to not releasing Tales games in the U.S., and they finally put out Tales of Graces F on the PS3.
I heard that's really good.
It's really good. I assume that I don't know if they released Tales of Scylla in the U.S. or not, but they've already released a sequel in Japan, so whatever.
All right, so, John, it's time for your number two.
All right, this one.
Game of
this one actually came out in 2012.
Whoa!
Of course, it's Black Ops 2 for Wii U.
Oh.
I'm not going to talk about it in length for, a third time, I think. But yeah, I was very impressed by the fact that, you know, it's just completely the same as the 360 and PS3 editions of it. They did some neat stuff with the gamepad. You know, you can actually play the game on the gamepad, and it looks pretty good. So... that was actually really impressive. You know, if you ever have to play it off TV, you can do so. And
the two-player split screen is probably the coolest feature to me.
Yep, and
that's the one I'm the most excited to try.
And you know, online you can use the gamepad to call in call in kill streaks. You know, change your loadout for your guy. And you know, so overall, I think they did a really good job on it. I think they actually impressed a lot of people that happen to play it. The only downside is, of course, the community I've heard is much smaller. So, you know, it's not like...
it's full of lamers and
babies. Well, yeah, I mean, the problem is, I mean, you know, if you go on 360, there's like 600,000 people online, and you're not going to have nearly that on Wii U, unfortunately. So, but...
yeah, but...
you'll also be killed about 600,000
yes.
times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Every person online will kill you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're new to the game, probably playing on Wii U would be a bit better, because let's just say on 360 the community is rather advanced in their skill with that game. It's not for the faint of heart, but yeah, just a very good job overall.
Nice. All right, so Guillaume, your number two.
My number two, and it really saddens me that I know for a fact that no one else has picked this. It's Kid Icarus Uprising.
Ah.
And it's just, I'm still, James was just talking about like a 3DS game with tons of content. Well, this game has tons of content. It's, you know, there's a kind of psych out moment where you think that the last chapter is chapter 9, and then it goes on for like 15 chapters after that. The game keeps going and going. It never really gets tiresome. And it's got some really, really neat ideas, some stages that are really surprising, where you play as an inanimate object, of all things, or, yeah. You know, like it really turns everything on its head, you know, a couple of times throughout the adventure. I really enjoyed, and I did not expect this, but I really enjoyed the voice acting. It didn't demo well during E3, but when you listen to it in context, and especially when you listen to the dialogue being said during gameplay, a little bit, you know, not unlike Uncharted. You know, like the characters are talking to themselves, like there's banter while you're exploring the levels. It really has a great kind of a Saturday cartoon vibe to it. And the story is, you know, pretty wacky and also pretty cartoony and just great.
The Last of Us has a great cartoon vibe to its dialogue.
the last of fuck?
Guy, did you play much of the online mode in this game?
I did right up to until I lost my copy.
I lost mine too. It was in my 3DS when I lost it.
Well, at some point, I hope that you finish the story because it's really good.
No, that's not happening.
That story sucks.
I played a fair amount of the online, and I really liked it. I played a lot in person, not just at PAX with you guys, but also with some friends. And it's, you know, very competitive, very... I'm really sad that not every Nintendo game by now has online components that Kid Icarus had. But yeah, like, it's really good. It's really fun to team up against another team and to just trounce them. And when you're on the receiving end, it's a little bit less fun. But then you just, you know, come up with another weapon and change up your strategy. And there's a lot of depth here. There's not a ton of modes, but just the variety of weapons kind of ensures that at some point you're going to, you know, come face to face with someone else who has exactly the right weapon against you. And you're going to have to switch up and, you know, try something different. So, I really, really enjoyed the game.
Very cool. I'm glad it was represented by one of us. And Kid Icarus is a game I can say that I definitely appreciate what it's doing, and I can see that it's very well made, but it's not a game for me. It's it's something about it. I think it was partly the controls, but also just partly the... I don't know, maybe the fact that you can't change weapons during the levels kind of got, you know, considering how much emphasis there was on the customization of your weapons, to be stuck with one for 20 minutes at a time, I found pretty annoying. And it was just a number of little things like that kind of grated on me. But it is incredibly well executed. And if you're into it, you're going to love it, because there's nothing else quite like it, especially made at that kind of quality.
Yeah.
So I can't argue with you, but it wouldn't have made my top 20 probably, but
that sounds like an argument.
It's a very well-made game. It's not harsh. It's just, I played a lot of the other games I like better, but, my number two game is a game that is definitely made for someone like me. It's a game that I'd been excited about for many years, and have James to thank for that. And that would be Xenoblade Chronicles.
Oh.
And a game that I'm so thrilled that it did finally come out in the West. Of course, I ended up playing the European version, which I got in 2011, but I really didn't play in 2011. I didn't start playing it until it came out in the West. Not in the West, in America.
Well, in North America, the really West.
Xenoblade is a flawed game, and ultimately, towards the end, I started to like it less and less as it went on, because it went on for far too long, and the game gets really unbalanced towards the end. You know, they start throwing you up against bosses that are just ridiculously overpowered.
Especially that one boss in the volcano.
Yeah, that one's horrible, but they're...
That's everybody's low point in the game.
Yeah, definitely. And that boss took me probably 5 hours to beat. When you combine all the different retries on it and the time that I had to go grind just so I would have a better chance. And unfortunately, that's not a singularity. There are half a dozen bosses towards the back half of the game that are, you know, of similar difficulty. And it's just a game that is so streamlined otherwise. It is constantly pushing you forward. It's making you feel like you can go anywhere and do anything and kind of play the game the way you want it to. And yet when you want to move the story forward, it constantly puts these roadblocks in your way. And it's really unfortunate because I like everything else about the game. It is gorgeous to look at. The world design is unparalleled. I mean, on any system, you will not find a world that is more impressive than what is constructed in Xenoblade Chronicles. A world that feels...
It's really awesome with a hyphen.
Yes.
with a hyphen.
It is inspiring, yes. Of awe. Yes.
Yeah.
it's kind of surreal when you go through the game, just all the stuff that's there. It's amazing and unlike anything you've experienced in a game. It just is. There isn't...
This was my number one, spoiler alert. But okay. I mean, it's what impressed me was, you know, I mean, the kind of, you know, the sprawling RPG stuff that's been done. I mean, perhaps not done as well as in this game, but what impressed me was like the little touches, like, you know, being rated on how well you relate to other characters and having, like, you know, the whole web of, like, it's really interesting how they really seem to go out of their way to kind of create a world, not just world geographically, but also sort of like your character's world and how they relate to others. I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah. The culture of the world is really interesting too. The beliefs of these people and the way they live their lives and the way they behave around each other. And then you start meeting the other races and that stuff gets super interesting too. It's a game that is surprising all the way through, including the ending, which is very surprising.
Yes,
very out of left field
ending.
And it's a game that ultimately, as much as I complain about the parts where it really bogged down and you know, it made me work for hours and hours just to get past one little spot, I was willing to stick with it and persist through that stuff because I loved it so much, because I was so excited to see what was around the next corner, both literally and figuratively. And that's the glory of Xenoblade, is that it creates this expectation very early on that the more you push forward, the more pleased you will be with what the game throws at you. And it does a fantastic job of keeping that up all the way to the very end. It is a really, really special experience. And if you haven't yet played through it, I certainly highly recommend it. Just be aware it is a 70-hour game. And
yeah, that will
you
happen.
Will not beat it faster than that. I don't care how good you are. It is a 70-hour game at least.
Yeah.
And that is honestly, it's too long. I mean, there is padding, unfortunately. There is padding. There are places where you'll spend more time than you should. But, geez, I mean, it's just it really is, though. It's so dense. It is so dense with things to do and places to see and people to talk to. The story is really, really cool. And I think they've created some enduring characters who are going to show up in games like Smash Brothers and hopefully sequels as well. And I'm having never played a game, by this developer before, I am absolutely thrilled to see what they do next. And I think it's going to be a pretty big deal when we find out what it is.
It's a tremendous evolution of what they've been, and I'm not including obviously Disaster in that. if you just step from the games that they've, the Nintendo games they've made, so the two Baten Kaito's titles.
Mm-hmm.
If you just step from each game to the next, you can see an evolution in how they treat their worlds and their environment. The first Baten Kaito's game, I still verdantly believe is the better game, but it's, you know, it just checks off the check boxes of RPG.
Yeah, it's kind of stiff.
It's got the party. I mean, it's got the little weird guy. It's got, you know, it's got the big bruising character. It's got the big bruising character's brooding love interest. It's got the innocent girl. It's got the overexcited teenage boy who's really into her. You know, it's got the whole regular cast list.
Yeah.
But what's great about its sequel is that they scratched all that. There are effectively three characters, and you meet them at the almost very beginning of the game, and you just sort of watch them grow up with each other. Or, well, around each other, I guess is the better way of putting it. It's just really nice to see that kind of care put into these characters, and you can see it transition into Xenoblade, even though they expanded the scope of the cast. There's no character that does they don't care for. There's no throwaways there, even if you do have characters like Ricky who check off the checkboxes. He's much more evolved than your normal Final Fantasy doodad character. I mean, he has, I mean, part of his driving force is that he's had too many damn kids. It's kind of a funny thing to throw into a game, but he's just, he's got, was it 10 kids, I think? And he just can't afford them. It's sort of an interesting human flaw put onto a character that is distinctly not human.
And the whole game is like that. They really defy the kind of archetypes that you expect in a JRPG. And, you know, Ricky is clearly comic relief, although you don't meet him until, what, 30 hours into the and yet he ends up being one of the main characters. And at first he just seems overtly silly and laughable.
And the other characters mock him for it.
Of course they do. And yet over time, I think you will grow attached to him and you will find that he has real emotions, and complex emotions that maybe his, linguistic faculties aren't fully capable of expressing. And, there's something deeper to him than first meets the eye. And you can say that about any of the characters in the game.
Even Ryan, who is a meathead. I mean, he is the meatiest meathead I've ever seen in a game. he is like Rico level meathead. I mean, he's just full of stupid.
Bullets.
I mean, but he turns in this relatively convincing performance late in the game where you realize that he's more than just big dumb, I'm going to hit everything.
Yeah.
But it takes another character to bring that out of him. And that's one thing about the Baten Kaito sequel that is really amazing, because you have three characters that form a sort of weird love triangle where they all hate each other in a way, but they all sort of care about each other, and you see rivalries develop, and yet they literally characters sacrifice themselves for people that they just say they hate. But it's convincingly. Like, not like, I hate you, but I'm going to do this anyway. I mean, there's no Gandalf jumping off the cliff here. These are characters who very clearly throw themselves into the line of danger. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what they have planned. Nintendo should be, if they're smart, just funnel money into them.
I mean, I feel like they're kind of poised to, like, take the next step. Like, I feel like they're right there. Like, the next game that they make will be their big breakout game where they become more than just this sort of, you know, semi-obscure Nintendo-centric, you know, RPG developer. Where they're going to have that game where everybody's like, oh my god, this RPG is so good that you have to get a Nintendo console just to play it.
But, you know, Xenoblade was almost there. I mean, the reviews were sterling. Reviewers who normally go like, well, it's a Wii game, so
horrible
whatever.
Timing, though. I mean,
it was. It
the
was
Wii was
awful.
Dead, already dead in the water by the time it came out
it
in
came
North
out
America.
In Europe. When it came out in America, it was even worse.
Yeah. So, it's, I mean.
But, God, I mean, whatever they're working on, please, Nintendo, let them show it at E3. I don't care if it's 3 years away. I just want to see something.
Yep.
Yeah. Anything. I want to see what platform it's for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm certainly excited for that. But I've said enough about Xenoblade, and I'll move on to James with your number two.
My number two game is Zero Escape versus Last Reward.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Which is barely a game, but it's amazing anyway. it's a VN, really. But I mean, what's really cool about this game? What's really, really cool about it is just its technique and its stylistic approach to telling story, and how it builds on your expectations or defies them, how it evolves things you learned from the original if you played it, and yet make sure you're aware of it if you didn't. It's just a really masterful storytelling that is somewhat lacking in games, especially without the adventure genre still kind of moving along. It's just really, really awesome. I'm really pleased with it.
Well, you haven't played Walking Dead yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay. I mean, for all the reasons that you talk about with Virtue's Last Reward, I think you will appreciate Walking Dead so much. And it is kind of a modern adventure game, although it's...
But, like, this game is just really superbly done. And I'm so glad they released its predecessor on the DS again. Like, they made a new print of it, because people really should play that. But then they need to go ahead and play this as well, because it's amazing. It's crazy, batshit insane, but it's amazing.
Very nice. Okay, John, you talked about your number one game of 2012, Xenoblade. Do you have anything else you want to say about it?
It's just, you know, I just really, really enjoyed it. I haven't played too far into it, but I got to say, it really impressed me, like I said, for the small things that it did to kind of, it wasn't just the cookie cutter, you know, Bat and Kaidos kind of thing, which is, I wouldn't say that's what I expected, but I didn't expect it to be as large in scope, but also at the same time make it, for such a large world, I didn't expect to have that world feel so well inhabited. I didn't expect the detail in the world to be as deep as it went. And I figured it would just be this huge sprawling world, and you know, the focus would be on, you know, the not really so much the day-to-day stuff, but just like, yeah, look at how huge the world is, and now we're going to this town and that town. But really, like, you know,
look
like
how huge the world is. You haven't even seen half of it yet.
Yeah, it's like just keep going, and you'll go to this town, and you'll find a bunch of characters, and they'll give you a bunch of cookie cutter, you know, quests, or you know, they'll tell you some story that you've seen in a thousand other JRPGs. And but yeah, I mean, instead, I got something that was, you know, that actually kind of encouraged you to stay one place, just stay a while, and just kind of see what's going on. And, you know, talk to everybody, because they all have something interesting to say. Go over here, because there's some interesting little thing that you can get lost in for a half an hour. Some little, not even a side quest, but just maybe just watching some characters do something, or maybe just kind of getting pulled into some little story. It was really, really good.
Yeah, there's like a little cave in this giant field that you could totally walk past a thousand times and miss.
Yep.
Like right on the Makanus' leg in like the southwest corner, there's this little cave. It takes you underground or below the plateau. And it's so easily missable. And then down there is this big hulking son of a bitch. That's like level 200. He doesn't even bother with you when you walk past, but he's amazing to look at.
Yep.
Like I mean, even now, having played the game a lot, I couldn't touch him. But I would sit down there and just watch him walk around because he's amazing to look at.
Oh, the monster design in this game is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like monsters from Earth Defense Force level size here. I mean, huge.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Great game.
I still choose to believe that John picked this because of the battle bikini.
No, you didn't. To be fair, though, the battle bikini is actually like half-decent armor, which is bizarro.
There's a lot of skimpy clothing that you can equip your characters with.
As well as should be.
Including for the male characters.
Yeah, so you can have Shulk run around in underwear.
That's what I'm here for.
It's Rhyme time.
Oh, no.
Choaniki Chronicles. All right, so Guillaume, it's time for your number one game of 2012.
All right, maybe people are going to think I'm crazy. There's no way that any of you could guess what this game is. This came out before you even knew about me. It is Rhythm Heaven Fever.
Oh,
nice.
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 A Wii game is my top game of 2012. And this game is really kind of the essence of Nintendo games. Like it's the reason, it's the perfect example of why I play Nintendo games. It is really, really challenging. It's all about the mechanics, about execution. And when you succeed, you feel like it feels so rewarding. And not only that, but the music and the presentation are so cheery and so funny that you're having fun the whole time. Like, what should be extremely frustrating
Remix 10.
Is actually really, really fun because you're laughing the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yeah, some standout games in there are Flux Step, Air Rally, Double Date is probably my favorite. I still haven't seen every game in the game, but Double Date is just hilarious. because you have, like, this guy on a bench with this girl and this kind of chimp looking thing. It's not a chimp, but it doesn't
it's
look
a
like
gopher.
It's a gopher. It doesn't look like one.
It's supposed to be, or maybe it's supposed to be like a prairie dog. I don't know. Oh, I bet they're prairie dogs actually. Now I think about it.
Some cartoon animal is also on a double date and asks you to kick away balls as they come so that he can enjoy a date with his girlfriend. And so you kick these soccer balls or footballs, and when you kick a football, in the background you see it fall, and then like some how do you pronounce that, Karateka? Anyway, kicks it away, or some football player jumps and catches it, or a dog will jump, and it's just it's hilarious. that game is like joy stamped on a disc. It's fantastic. Wow. And sometimes for some of the games, it's funny because the game has such better presentation value than any of the other games before it, if simply because all of like that series used to be portable, and this is the only console game. But it looks bright and you want to look at it, but I feel like it throws me off too much. And this
It's deliberate. I mean, there's so much stuff going on. It's extra challenge.
Yeah, and I find myself closing my eyes and just going by the music and playing the game that way. And sometimes for some of the mini games, it really, really helps. So it's kind of a catch-22 there. And it's really the only rhythm game that I can think of that I can actually do that in, you know, that you can actually play the game solely through listening.
Pretty much, yeah. It's to borrow a phrase from pop culture, the visuals are like a unicorn crapped a rainbow into my brain. I mean, it's just so freaking over the top beautiful, and everything's got a very awesome, very consistent animated style with the hard black lines. Everything looks like it was hand drawn. It's really cool. I'm really super 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 just in awe of this game, and I can't remember if I think I gave it a 9.5 when I reviewed it. I mean, I reviewed this game highly because it is unbelievable.
Yep.
And it's obviously it's my number one game as well. I gave it a 9.5 and I'm just heaping praise on it. and there's not much spoiler now. If you haven't guessed that, you're really not listening to me.
James, I had forgotten how much you love this game. It came out so long ago.
And I actually was talked about it on the show before it even came out.
Yeah, well, Greg was the first one of us to freak out over this game because he played it, you know, he imported it from Japan when it first came out.
Right.
And then I guess maybe when it came out and you were talking about it, maybe I just wasn't surprised that you liked it and it didn't have that impact on me, but I was not expecting this to be your number one. That's funny.
I can't not give it to it. It's possibly my favorite Wii game ever. I mean, it's...
Holy shit.
It's so good.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the level of quality put into this game is really just... I mean, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, I can't think of, you know, a weak link. I can't think of something that doesn't really work. Some people complain about the way that you have to gain perfects, but in a way, I think it's, you know, like, you can only attempt perfects when the game tells you attempt to perfect it, but it kind of saves you from yourself, because in that kind of game I can get really really OCD and not move on until I've perfected the level. And so I kind of like the idea that the game is telling me, well, you know, play something else and you can come back to this later when I tell you to,
you know, in a sense. But at the same time, it's deeply frustrating when you perfect it and you won't get credit for it. That's what's frustrating about it. If you actually perfect some of these stages, and so
this is a problem I don't have to worry about because I'm not gonna get perfects.
Ringside, for example, the very first time I played that, I perfected it. I didn't get credit for it though.
Yeah,
I have never perfected that stupid stage ever again.
Oh,
it's like every time I get a chance to try for perfect, I always miss something somewhere at some point. So, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to be able to just do it, but I understand that that's part of the challenge of the perfect system, is that you can only do it when the game tells you it's time to try.
Yeah, and you kind of gain a muscle memory for the games. I hadn't touched the game for a long, long time, for a couple of months, and just before recording, I played it again just to make sure that this game actually deserved it. And I attempted one of the mini games that I had never played before, and I failed horribly. I couldn't get the timing right. And then the game told me, like, well, you can attempt Fuck Step. Try to perfect that.
That game's just taunting you.
I managed to do it pretty easily because I still remembered how to play. Like, I did the little tutorial, the training before, but then, you know, once I was into it, I actually did it without much problems. So yeah, like it feels like you're getting better at the game, and that is why feeling like you're getting better at an incredibly challenging game, there's not much that equals that, in my opinion.
Yeah, see, I completely forgot, but I did pick this up, and I played it briefly, and I got, you know, pulled into one of, you know, something else, some other game, but I actually got this at Best Buy. This was my steal of the year. I got it for, I think, like $5 at Best Buy.
Which is just holy insane.
I mean, I got it for a fucking ludicrous price. And because I waited in line, I saw it on, like, you know, cheap-ass gamer or whatever, and they said that it was on sale for $5. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go out and buy that. And so I actually waited in line. I actually waited outside Best Buy on, like, a Sunday. And I got in there at 9 a.m., and they had one copy left. Oh. I got it for, like, $5. So...
Steal of the century.
It came out at 30, I think, which is a steal on its own. I mean, it's awesome. It's such an amazing game. I literally feel concerned for, I don't know what they do now. Like, I know that's a weird concern to have about a game, but I really don't.
And what they do is go make a new WarioWare, or better yet, go make a new 2D Metroid.
Yep.
The guys who made this. Mr. Sakamoto. But to the guys who made this, they're connected to the WarioWare team, but ultimately a lot of this is done outside a house at Nintendo.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy that makes this, I mean, you could tell he's a musician. It's everywhere. And it's, oh, God, what a freaking masterpiece.
You guys are shaming me because I have this game too, but I only played it for a couple of hours. I played it with my sister and brother-in-law, and they enjoyed it a lot, actually. But then I got one of those soundbar systems, you know, for my TV. Just for kind of some kind of cheap upgrade in the sound quality of my TV. And it added just enough latency that the next time I tried to play Rhythm Heaven, it was a total bomb. And it's fixable. Yeah. I can go in there and mess around with it and fix it. I just never took the time to do it. And so I really haven't seen very much of this game. I guess I really need to go back to it.
Yes, you do.
Me too.
Yeah, it's...
I'm also shamed.
And yes, you are.
It's so cool.
I am duly assigned, and I shall fulfill my assignment. So that leaves me going last. I wasn't planning to, but my number one game is The Last Story.
Duh, yeah.
I've only played it for about 8.5 hours, which is less than John played Xenoblade. And yet, as a percentage, I've seen a lot more of The Last Story than he has of Xenoblade.
You've seen about 80%.
I'm on chapter 15, I think, now. And I mean, I haven't spent a ton of time with it. I only got it a couple months ago, and I only started playing it right before Christmas. But the game is immediately impressive and exciting. And, at this point, I've played enough to feel very confident that I'm going to ultimately enjoy this more than Xenoblade. And chiefly because I feel like The Last Story is just as innovative in the RPG genre as Xenoblade is. In different ways, and some of the ways are similar, but for the most part, I think it tweaks the genre in different ways than Xenoblade is, but it's no less creative and disruptive. And yet, I feel like The Last Story is just a little more attuned to the way I want to play games nowadays. It cuts out a lot of the bullshit. And and for those of us who have a tendency to kind of trot around and do a bunch of extra stuff and never make any progress towards the main quest because you're worried about missing content that you may not be able to go back to, The Last Story just doesn't let you get into that trap. It keeps pushing you forward, and it doesn't have that kind of Call of Duty feel where it feels like you're on this roller coaster and you're not really in control and you're not really interacting with the game all that much. You're just kind of pointing where it tells you to point and shooting when it tells you to shoot. The Last Story, it still feels like they give you flexibility and creativity and strategy in the way that you play the game. And there are multiple ways to do things, and they're all really cool and really, really satisfying. It's a game with an intelligent story, extremely, you know, nice graphics for Wii. The music is fantastic. I mean, you know, it's Uematsu, and he's one of my favorite game composers ever from the Final Fantasy series. And I love the idea that You know, this guy Sakaguchi, who created Final Fantasy, left Square Enix, or maybe was kicked out. I don't know for sure. I think he was kind of kicked out after the movie.
Was told to sit in the corner and not really touch his desk.
Right. And I love that he, you know, he made a couple of things on Xbox 360 that were kind of okay.
Blue Dragon,
and then
especially.
He gets a chance to make a game for Nintendo and on the Wii. And rather than say, well, you know, Wii owners really want this traditional Japanese RPG experience that they haven't been getting because no one's making those kind of games for Wii. Instead, he's like, I'm not even going to try to like recreate Final Fantasy, you know, because when the title of The Last Story first came out, we all thought, oh, good grief, this is going to be the most shameless clone ever of his own series.
The first thought was clone. The second thought was lawsuit.
Yeah, but the Last Story is actually way more interesting than Final Fantasy has been in a long time. And it is, to me, much better executed. It's leaner. It's tighter. To me, it's an RPG that even people who don't like RPGs will enjoy and will enjoy right off the bat and will have no problem getting into. And yet people who do love RPGs, I've been playing them since I was about 6 years old. And I love, it's maybe my favorite kind of game. It's the game, certainly the game that I, the genre that I've put the most time into over the past 25 years. And this game appeals to me too, even though it is so different and it's such a striking twist on what you expect from a Japanese RPG. I see what it's doing and I'm totally on board for it because I think its intentions are in the right place. It's not trying to water down. It's not trying to mainstream RPGs. It's not trying to make them super casual or super easy.
It's being its own thing.
It is exactly. It is setting out to do something that no one else has ever done before. And it's not lacking in complexity or sophistication. It just does it in a different way than other RPGs do. And I just find it incredibly satisfying and exciting to play. And I'm not even finished with it. I was just playing it right before we did the podcast and just eating it up. Just I'm so excited to play more of it. And I'm so extremely thankful for XSEED for publishing it in North America. And I think it's another game that's $30 now. You can get this on, on physical retail disc. And I really, really strongly encourage people to go out and try The Last Story. Even if you're not an RPG fan, I think you'll be very, very happy with your decision.
I pre-ordered both Xenoblade and The Last Story. I played maybe like 15 hours of Xenoblade, but I still haven't touched The Last Story. So if we take a break from the podcast for a month, I should be able to power through them.
No, you wouldn't get through. Wouldn't get through Xenoblade.
I'll start with The Last Story.
You know, considering how much you like Crimson Shroud and the reasons you like Crimson Shroud, I think you'll be very, very happy with your purchase.
I know it's I everything I hear about the game I love, and I can't wait to get into it. So I will pretty soon.
Awesome. Well, guys, that is going to wrap up our top five personal game list from 2012. A few trends that I noticed, for one thing, even in the year 2012, all four of us, our number one games were for Wii.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Not for Wii U and not for 3DS.
Odd.
Yeah.
And in fact, only one Wii U game even got mentioned.
It's weird. I mean, Wii had like maybe four or five games this past year that were worth
good.
Mentioning, but all of them were so good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the quality distilled down into a very, very small number of game releases.
Yeah, well, the Wii is still it's the most mature platform. The 3DS has been around for a while, so I don't know what its excuse is. Yeah, like the Wii, all these great games are really coming at the tail end of its life.
Guillaume's scolding the Wii.
Yeah,
right
I mean,
now.
I don't...
The 3DS. I don't know what your excuse is, mister, but...
You know, I don't own a Wii U, but I think if I had one, it probably wouldn't have altered my list that much beyond, you know, New Super Mario Brothers U. So I would have been on.
Well, I was kind of hesitating between Sonic Racing and Mutant Muds.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I find that Mutant Muds was more impressive, and Sonic Racing, while really, really good and high quality, and really challenging, has kind of the same I got to finish this mission and perfect this mission thing that Rhythm Heaven has, except that it's not quite as joyful. So
that's the Sonic experience right there.
Now, Sonic almost made my list at the number 5 slot, but I couldn't put it over Mario because I played more Mario and I've enjoyed Mario more. But Sonic Racing is very, very good. And as far as 3DS, I feel like there were a lot of good games on 3DS, but there were a lot of there were very few excellent games on 3DS. A lot of really good ones, a lot of ones that I enjoyed a lot. You know, I enjoyed Paper Mario, enjoyed Theater Rhythm, enjoyed Tales of the Abyss, and a few other ones, but nothing quite made it over the cusp for me except for Fluidity 2. That was the one that actually I was just had the most enthusiasm while I was playing it. But yeah, I'm hoping that 3DS is going to come through a little bit stronger in 2013.
Yeah.
Well, the RPGs are coming, and Atlas, yeah. Exceed, and
yep, Castlevania's coming, yep. Which should be good.
I hope so, man.
Yeah.
I hope so. Maybe. Possibly good.
Yep. So before we wrap up, we're not going to do lists or anything, but anybody want to throw out a game or two on non-Nintendo platforms that really blew your mind this year that you'd like to kind of highlight a little bit?
Blew my mind? I don't know.
I have not played a whole lot on my PS3. I mostly waited for games to become free on PSN. Yeah. I think that the game that made the biggest impression on me was actually Double Dragon Neon.
Nice.
And nice. I really like I'm not being... I actually enjoy the game, and I found it really, really funny. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I play video games. I want to enjoy myself, and it was very enjoyable.
Did you play Journey?
I expected it to have been free on PSN Plus a long time ago. So, egg on my face or whatever.
I find myself doing the same thing, holding off to see if something comes free on PS Plus.
Well, maybe it will one day, but if you ever get impatient, I think it's well worth your money. Journey is a very special experience. And
I love Flower, so I'm sure it's great.
I do love Flower very much. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say if anything blew my mind. I mean, I liked Halo 4. You know, it was very, very good. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it blew my mind. Probably the game I was most impressed with was Guild Wars 2. It was very, very good.
You know, John, I need to have a real serious talk with you sometime because
an intervention.
No, it's kind of the opposite. I want you to be my enabler into Guild Wars 2 because everything I hear about it makes me think this might be finally the MMO for Johnny.
Well, that's the thing. It's what I like about it is that it's the world. It looks beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. And there's a lot of detail in it. That same kind of thing that I was talking about is like the detail in the world is really, really good. Lots of voice acting and all the NPCs, all that kind of stuff. It's just a great looking game.
And you're rewarded for exploration. Like everything I hear about Guild Wars 2 makes me think it kind of sounds like Xenoblade.
Yeah, it is a lot like.
And there's no monthly fee. So
yeah, there's no monthly fee. The thing is, it's fun to just. It's a great game for just going in there and not necessarily having a set, you know, kind of thing to do. Like WoW is very much like you get in there, you do this, and then you get out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's more structured, and that's partially good because you know exactly what you're going to get out of it, and you can play it. You know how long you're going to play it typically. Or you can have a task. Maybe you have a task that only takes you 15 minutes. You just hop on, do it for 15 minutes, you hop off. Guild Wars 2 has a very different pace. You can sort of, it encourages you to explore the world, encourages you to just kind of get lost in it sort of thing, which is very cool. The drawback to that is the fact that it's a little less structured. There's a lot more options with the way that you create your character. You're not a tank or DPS or a healer. You can kind of mix that up, and that's, you know, it's good. The problem with that is that they really don't explain it that well to you, so that's kind of a drawback. But it's
okay.
It's,
well, it's I might really need well you done. To be my tour guide.
Yeah.
Then.
Yep.
My Sherpa.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So a couple games I just want to highlight. I've already talked about The Walking Dead a lot, but it's an incredible experience.
I really have to play it.
Really,
I mean,
recommend people try it.
I really got to play that.
It's
game.
Really too bad it's being ignored by every website.
Yeah, I know. The other one that you've, I'm sure, heard a lot about, but I think is totally deserving of every single bit of praise it gets is XCOM Enemy Unknown. It's a game that I've played 20 hours of on Steam, and I'm not quite finished with it, but I'm getting pretty close now. And that game is, I don't know that I played any other game this year that was, that is so exciting. And it's not even a real time game. I mean, it's a turn based game that will have your heart pumping and will have you sweating and just kind of like gripping your desk as you play it. It is fantastic. It's a strategy game, but it's very easy to get into. You can play it with a controller. And I think it has a really great mass appeal in a genre that's known for being really hardcore and hard to get into. And the style of it with the aliens and the, you know, the scientific research aspect of it is just so awesome. So I've been a huge fan of that. And I was trying to think of, seems like there was at least one more. James, did you have anything really crazy that jumped out at you?
I really, really enjoyed playing Zone of the Enders HD Collection. Really, tremendously enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that it's actually slower than the original games a little bit. Like, the combat's a little bit slower, but still, it's such, like, I've never played a giant robot game with such organic, quick, twitchy combat. I don't think I've ever played a third-person action game, even ones that didn't move in 3D that require you to really engage in what is artistry in order to be effective in combat.
Hmm.
I mean, it really is, you're basically dancing with your opponents, especially in the boss battles. And I'm really excited that they've got something in the works as a follow-up for this franchise, at least apparently they do.
Yeah,
it's just really kind of a fun, tight, really structured experience. I also really enjoyed playing To the Moon, that like we spoke about last week.
That's, oh yeah, good choice.
That's really, really good game.
Yeah, To the Moon's pretty fantastic. All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this segment. So before we go, I want to remind everyone, you can always send your emails, send us your top fives or your reactions to our top fives. Anything else you want to hear us talk about, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And of course, next week, we're going to be doing our live retroactive for The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. We're going to be doing it on Sunday. That's January 27th, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Sunday, January 27th, and we're going to start it at noon Pacific, which is 3 p.m. in the afternoon Eastern time zone. And hopefully this will give lots of people a chance to participate no matter what time zone you're in. We can't cater to everyone across the world, but
9 p.m. Europe.
Hopefully that works for a lot of you. And I'm really looking forward to it. Of course, this segment only works if people call in and talk to us about Majora's Mask. So I hope you're making plans to do that. If you are available between, we'll go for at the most 2 hours. Basically between 12 and 2 Pacific or 3 and 5 Eastern time or whatever in between there. You know, I hope you'll be able to listen in. We're going to, of course, have an audio stream, so everyone will be able to listen to it live, as well as a Skype call-in number that you can call into and tell us what you think about Majora's Mask or ask us questions, get us ranting on topics, and we'll have questions for you as well to see what you thought of it. So I really hope you've been playing along. If not, there's always time to get in some of it before next Sunday. And we will have all the details for that up on the website, so check the show notes for this episode and be checking the front page of NintendoWorldReport.com because that's where we'll have the link for the page where that'll have the audio stream and all the information you need. And in advance, if you really want to call in, I would strongly encourage you to install Skype, get it set up, figure out how to use it, and make sure that you have a good headset or a good pair of headphones to use with your internal microphone, and make sure that all that's working really well. So that's all for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we hope we will be talking to you next time on Radio Free Nintendo.
Later.
Bye.